You're listening to another.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is Friday, June 19th, 2 days from Father's Day. Hope all of you dads out there have a terrific Father's Day weekend. Great to join you to play that inevitable game of catch-up at the end of the week. And there's never a shortage of topics, as we all well know. So I thank you for joining me. Those of you who are familiar with me, familiar with the program, familiar with my mission, if you will, know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, an agency that was sliced, diced, reconstituted, and shuffled into the DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, that is so messed up that I have come to refer to it as the Department of Homeland Surrender. This program is focused usually on immigration issues, although we sometimes do go a bit off that beaten path. But today we will stay with immigration. There is so much going on, and it is impacting us in so very many ways. There are a couple of websites I want to talk about just for a couple of minutes before we dig into the mess that we have in front of us. My own personal website, of course, Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. Proud to be a senior fellow, a writer for them for a bunch of years. They do a phenomenal job out on the West Coast. I'm here on the East Coast, and we have America between us. And we are doing everything that we can to get the word out. They have a bunch of great writers. I'm just one of many. And of late, they have been hammering the issues of the water shortage in California, Disney firing a bunch of Americans. What a treacherous act of betrayal. And finally, also how Con Edison, or Southern Edison, actually, Con Edison was in New York, also did the same thing. Laid off a bunch of high-tech, well-qualified, obviously experienced IT employees and replaced them with folks from other countries, principally India, and we're going to talk about what that means to America and our economy. And by the way, capsweb.org is their website. Please go visit it, and visit it regularly, because every day they have a new posting up there. My most recent posting for that organization is up on the website. I gave it the title, Immigration System Must Work for the Best Interests of Americans. What a novel thought. I also write for Progressive for Immigration Reform, PFIR. My latest article should be posted sometime this coming week, so I'd love for you to go visit Progressives for Immigration Reform. The Social Contract, another publication, it's a quarterly, published obviously every 3 months, will be coming out in July with the summer edition. I have an article in it. I'm actually the lead story. And it's a retrospective as we approach the 14th anniversary of the horrific terrorist attacks of 9/11, where we are now in terms of immigration and therefore, obviously, in terms of national security. What an amazing idea, linking border security, effective immigration law enforcement, and national security. Who would have imagined? Certainly not the news media, certainly not all too many members of the political machinery on the federal as well as on state and local levels. We'll talk a little bit about that. And finally, if we have a little bit of time, and I know that there will be an article or two that I have written and perhaps another one that I will be writing about what the Inspector General had to say this past week when he testified before Congress, I think you will find it astonishing. I mean, absolutely, utterly astonishing. And I will tell you that the Inspector General showed great courage in hammering the administration for its executive orders, for that magic pen that the president appears to wield. I'd like to know what stationery store he bought the damn thing in. So we're going to talk about the Inspector General's report, and I urge you to keep your eye out to those websites and look for articles about what the IG had to say. For those of you who aren't familiar with the concept of an Inspector General, it's the equivalent of internal affairs for the police department. They're the watchdog. They're the ones who are supposed to make these people accountable. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, he took out his hammer and he hit that gong a bunch of times. So stick with me. I'm glad you're here this evening. And let's get right into this mess that we find ourselves to be in, in large measure because of the collusion between a whole bunch of different people coming at this thing from different places. And we're talking now about politicians, we're talking about the companies, we're talking about the special interest groups. The list goes on, and it's notorious. And that brings us to the article that has most recently been posted by Front Page Magazine. And the title, I think you will agree, is very descriptive. I called it Theft by Deception, the Immigration Con Game. I think that works real well, don't you? Because, you see, what we are listening to from all the politicians are lies, absolute and utter lies. So I came up with this title, and my friends over at Front Page Magazine added a little bit to it. I called it Theft by Deception, the Immigration Con Game, and they added the subtitle. I have a wonderful editor over there, Nicole, who does an incredible job. I love working with her. And she added to that how politicians are robbing citizens of access to the American dream. Actually, a lot more than even just the American dream is being robbed. I really hope you will go to Front Page Magazine and read my article in its entirety. But let's get started with the article, because I think you will be astonished to find out exactly how much treachery is involved where our immigration is concerned. You know, I'm just trying to get to my notes here. Forgive me. You know, there's a definition for theft by deception. It's basically what con artists do. And that was where my jumping off position was on this, to look at exactly how the deception is being carried out. And that's what people really need to focus on. They are speaking in terms that are designed to be deceptive, that are designed to confuse people, that are designed to obfuscate the truth. It's a con artist's dream what they are doing. And therein lies the entire problem that we're facing. Because when you look at the definition of theft by deception, think about what we're being told by our alleged leaders. It's exactly what this is. It is theft by deception. And so therein we have this huge problem, I mean really huge problem, because the lies are being repeated often. The consequence of it is that many people are starting to believe the lies or have bought the lies for quite some time. I mean, this goes back decades. The deception, the artful use of language started with Jimmy Carter saying, oh no, immigration employees will no longer refer to illegal aliens as illegal aliens. We'll call them undocumented. That doesn't sound quite as bad. Well, when someone runs the border, we call that entry without inspection, and it's a serious crime because it means people snuck in the dark of night, or they snuck in by evading the border patrol, by evading everybody that's supposed to make certain that we screen the people who come here. When criminals are able to get away with their crimes, the politicians scream bloody murder. When terrorists are able to carry out the attacks, oh, they want to know why the dots weren't connected. But when people are able to evade the inspections process, that seems to be a no big deal kind of a moment. Think about when Snowden released all those secrets, how many members of Congress, both parties, the president, everybody, how do we give them a security clearance? They said the same thing with the Nadal Hassan, the shooter at Fort Hood. How could he be in the military? How could he have passed his background investigation? They said that about the Navy Yard shooter. Who screened this guy? And, of course, when you screen people getting on airplanes, if you don't do a good job, that makes headlines because, in fact, the TSA did apparently a lousy job of screening. So screening becomes a big deal until it's a matter of who we screen that want to enter the United States, and then we talk about undocumented. And we hear people like Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, the president, John McCain, many of the Republican candidates say, oh, if they snuck in, we can't get rid of them all. Let's just give them ID and make them legal and put them to work so they can pay taxes. That's not what this is about, ladies and gentlemen. It's not about making them pay taxes. They snuck in. And when what you don't hear from the politicians and what you don't hear from the talking heads on television, okay, is that the people who are being processed for lawful status, because the numbers are so great right now, without the addition of what they're claiming is 11 million, and I'm going to tell you, it's probably 30 to 40 million, many of these people are being processed without an interview, without field investigations. They put a pile of paper in front of an adjudications officer. I did that job for a year, by the way. So when I speak about these issues, it's not as though I'm speaking about it from a hypothetical perspective, which is what just about everybody else who proclaims to be an expert is doing. They wouldn't know my job if they tripped over it in broad daylight. You know, I was an inspector at an international airport, at Kennedy Airport, for 4 years. I spent a year as an adjudications officer. I spent 26 years as an agent rotating through all the squads within the investigations branch. So when I talk about immigration law enforcement, this isn't a thing where I have to run to some book and thumb through it rapidly and say, oh, my God, how do I find the information? No, I just reach back into my memory, which is as sharp as ever, fortunately, and remember what the hell was that we were experiencing and trying to do an honest, decent job, because we were so overwhelmed back then that it's only gotten worse. And this administration, as you will find out this evening, has been doing nothing more than running interference to make damn sure that nobody gets to do the job, because they don't want the job done. But let me tell you, the Republicans don't either, with a couple of exceptions. People like my good friend Lou Barletta, congressman from Pennsylvania, Jeff Sessions, who I wish would run for president, Chuck Grassley, David Vitter, senator, Steve King. There are some good people on the Hill, but they are few and far between, and that's not an all-encompassing list. But if you put the names of the good guys on one end of the scale and the names of the deceivers on the other end of the scale, it wouldn't even be a competition. I mean, most of these folks are con artists. It's absolutely astonishing. So we hear, well, if these people have been living here illegally in the shadows for 7 years, then it makes sense to give them lawful status. And I heard this from Charles Krauthammer. You know, you watch Fox, you watch all these networks, it's frustrating. Because, and I like Charles Krauthammer. His story is inspirational. To become paralyzed in a tragic accident at the prime of his life as a college kid with the whole world ahead of him, with every opportunity in front of him, with so much skill and talent and intelligence. So to turn that bucket of lemons into the lemonade that he did do, my gosh, it's breathtaking, and I commend him. He's a role model. But he doesn't know everything, and where immigration's concerned, apparently he doesn't know much of anything. But I don't blame him, because the TV networks allow people on to talk about immigration who know less than nothing. Think about it. When they talk about cancer, they'll bring in scientists, biologists, doctors, surgeons. They bring in everybody in the white coats, right? When we went to war in Iraq, most of what we heard from was told to us by former generals, colonels, Navy SEALs, the people on the ground, the people at the Pentagon. They weigh in because, darn it, that's the military. But then we talk about immigration. So we have radio talk show hosts, and yes, I am one. But again, what I bring with me is a vast encyclopedia of experience. Not that I'm smarter than anybody else. It's just that I was there for 30 years, and I've been involved with the issue. It's hard for me to admit this, for 43 years. I started when I was 4 years old, obviously. So they bring in the radio talk show hosts. They bring in newspaper columnists. They bring in political pollsters. Precious few people are allowed to walk into a TV studio these days with any real-world experience on immigration. So what do you expect? This would be like putting me in front of a camera and saying, Mike, we want you to talk about neurosurgery today. Wow. Wouldn't that be interesting? Why is it when we send space probes to Pluto, and in fact in the next couple of weeks, New Horizons will be arriving at Pluto, almost something out of science fiction, thinking back to my youth, And my original goal was, in fact, to be an aerospace engineer, but I certainly wouldn't be qualified to go on a major program and start talking about the exploration of Pluto. And they don't bring in talk show hosts to do that. They don't bring in columnists and pollsters. They bring in scientists and physicists and astronauts. But where immigration's concerned, we trivialize it. We're told what's fair. And then I have to think about my friend Lou Barletta. This guy is a role model for members of Congress. Lou and I speak frequently. One of the things I've told him is every chance you get, Lou, stick that 9/11 Commission report into those congressional hearings. And he does it. And not long ago, it was around just before Christmas time, December of last year, there was Lou Barletta grilling, barbecuing, French frying and deep frying Jay Johnson, the head of Homeland Security. And in a very calm, even tone, he and I share an interesting background. We both were undefeated members of the debating teams for our respective schools. He's very, very good, Lou is, and I've shared the stage with him a number of times, and I always look forward to it. And he said to Jay Johnson, "Mr. Secretary, why is it that whenever the conversation turns to immigration, we always hear what's good for the illegal immigrant, and we never hear about what this does to the Americans who are affected by it? This is not fair." And I almost jumped up and down for joy, because that's exactly right. We are told that we lack compassion if we want our immigration laws enforced. Tell that to the thousands of families who lost loved ones to illegal aliens, drunk drivers, unlicensed drivers, drug traffickers, sociopaths, terrorists, people who should never have gained entry into our country, who should never have been allowed to remain here. You mean the fact that Americans died and that I'm concerned about it means that I lack compassion? In what parallel universe? And this is not about xenophobia, or as the late Arlen Specter attempted to accuse me of when I testified before a Senate hearing a number of years ago, exophobia. I have to tell you, it took me every ounce of self-control to not burst out laughing, and I thought, wow, here's a senator who thinks I'm afraid of the letter X. And then, of course, he corrected himself. But boy, it was a moment, and I believe a video is still available up on the Senate website. Exophobia. Why does compassion indeed never involve American citizens? And that was the question, the exact question, that Congressman Barletta posed to Secretary of Homeland Surrender, Jay Johnson. And Johnson said, well, you don't understand, Congressman. If you go out there in Washington, you go to these restaurants, you see all these undocumented workers here. What are we supposed to do? I want to document them and give them employment authorization and get them on the books. Stop. Hold it right there. Think about what that statement says. Think about it. We have immigration laws to prevent foreign nationals from competing with American workers. And, of course, we keep getting slammed by the garbage that we've elected to office. Shame on us. Oh, the undocumented do the work. Americans are too lazy or too ignorant or too stupid or too incompetent to do. Really? Really? If you have an elected representative who talks to you that way and you don't fire him, then you're getting exactly what you deserve. The problem is we're along for the ride. Anybody who has such contempt and such a low opinion of American workers, American achievement, American exceptionalism, and then runs for office talking about American exceptionalism and then telling us that the way that we need to continue on is to bring in people from every other country on the planet, then what's this BS about American exceptionalism? These people's noses are growing, and I'd like to cut their noses off. They belong to the Pinocchio Club, and we're tolerating them. We're reelecting them, and they're making the same statements even as they seek the highest office of the United States, the presidency. And the people are clapping like crazy. Ted Cruz, a week or two ago, and I was getting texts from people who were in the audience going crazy, and they said, how can he be saying this? But the majority of the people in the audience got up and went crazy. They were cheering him on. Ted Cruz said, the next president must finally, he repeated the word finally perhaps eight times, secure that border. and the place went nuts. It was red meat. And I agree, by the way, the border needs to be secure. It doesn't need 8 years, though. And it doesn't need gazillions of dollars. This is just the nonsense being spewed. It's part of the con game. But then he said, I'm going to make sure that America leads because we need to bring in thousands and thousands of brilliant best minds. And, you know, and the audience went berserk. We need to import the world's best and brightest. If you truly believe in American exceptionalism, ladies and gentlemen, then I submit to you that the world's best and brightest have a very simple name. They are called Americans. And for that audience, cheer those words that he's promising to import hundreds of thousands. That's his goal, hundreds of thousands of high-tech foreign workers and cut the legs out of the middle class. Wow. To hear that audience cheering him made me ill. This is the equivalent of Colonel Sanders standing in front of a barnyard filled with chickens, proclaiming that he has a new recipe and watching the chickens go crazy and start getting excited at the mere thought that Colonel Sanders has a new recipe for the destruction of the middle class of the United States of America. That's what the new recipe is. Therein lies the problem, ladies and gentlemen. We don't need to import brilliant people. We are here. And think about this. How is it that Disney has been so successful using American employees? Obviously, there was nothing deficient about the work they did, but they laid them all off. They laid them. Why? Because they want cheaper labor so they can make more money, and the hell with the Americans. And then the talking heads on TV sit there and they scratch their head. And the dandruff is flying. It looks like a flipping blizzard. And what do they say? Well, the economy isn't improving. We don't understand it. Unemployment is better. No, it's not. They juggle those numbers. You know, this is like listening to the news in Russia back in the 50s. You know, Pravda and Izvestia. You want me to explain to you why the economy is going downhill? Every year, middle-class families lose income. In fact, it's been said that the average American family now is earning roughly the same wages that they would have earned 20 years ago. Are our expenses today what they were 20 years ago? Of course not. Does a dollar today buy what a dollar bought 20 years ago? Absolutely not. So we have American wages actually declining, not just staying level, and in real dollars. We're not even talking about adjusting for inflation. Wages are dropping. So you're taking money out of the pockets of the consumers, and then these brilliant people with these great degrees from God knows, you know, what university, the school of dumbness and foolishness, sit there and say, oh, how come the economy isn't doing anything? You're bankrupting your consumers, Nimrods. They don't have money. Can you go into a store and buy a new surround sound system for your living room with belly button lint? What in the world are American families supposed to use for money? Can they use Monopoly money, perhaps? The astonishing part of it is you're hearing this from every network. It doesn't matter which one. I will tell you that I've done a number of appearances on One American News Network. They're getting it. Where are the rest of the networks that are out there? They sit there and pontificate, the stock market's going up, the stock market's going down, the stock market's going sideways, are they going to raise the interest rates? Look, if you want the economy to grow, then American workers have to get enough money that they can spend the money. Henry Ford understood business. He made certain that the Model T Fords that his workers were building were priced cheaply enough that the same people who constructed those cars would have enough money to buy those cars. That's how he became successful. If those cars were double or triple the price of what they were and the workers who built them couldn't have bought them, I got news for you. They never would have been a successful Ford Motor Company. He would have wound up in the dustbin of history along with so many other car makers. What made Ford successful was the understanding that the workers needed to earn enough money to buy the cars. So it was a synergistic situation. They earned the money. They bought the cars. Company profits soared. they were able to build more cars and sell more cars to more people, then with it the economy went up. If you think about the lies you're being told by all these talking heads on television, and they're telling us that comprehensive reform would do wonders for the American economy, it is a lie, and the person saying it is a swindler. And you can name anybody that says it, and when you watch TV, I want you to watch their lips moving, because if it's on your TV just became a lie detector. If anyone says on the air that comprehensive immigration reform would be good for the economy, you have just seen your television become a lie detector, because if the lips are moving, the idiot saying the words is lying. There is no way in hell that bringing in more workers who send more money out of our economy and displace more American workers is going to do anything but increase the rate of descent for our economy and our well-being. In fact, the United Nations has predicted this, that if we enact comprehensive immigration reform, that more money will be wired out of the United States. Last year, between $125 and $200 billion was wired out of the United States. And I've written about it. The U.S. economy in the first quarter contracted by 0.7%, according to statistics that are published. Now, let's contrast the U.S. economy with the economy of India. The Indian economy, on the other side of this, went up by 7.5%. Guess what the remittances look like for India? India gets the greatest amount of remittances of any country on the planet. For those of you not familiar with the term remittances, it's the money that is wired from one place to another. And the money remitters include everything from the post office to banks, Western Union, they're all money remitters. They allow you to transfer money electronically from one country to the other. Last year, India was the recipient of about $70 billion, 70 billion with a B, $70 billion. Their economy went up. Now, I'm not going to tell you that there are not other factors. Of course, there are. But look what happens. Economists talk about something called the multiplier effect, and if this sounds a little technical, it's really not that hard. Bear with me, because I want you to be armed with the facts. I really want you to understand what's going on, not the way the liars on TV or the mainstream media do. And see if this doesn't make sense to you folks. Okay? When a dollar is spent in an economy, it's generally believed to generate three more dollars of commerce. That's the multiplier effect. So that was the reason for the economic stimulus package. If you pump money into the economy, people will have money to spend, they will make purchases, and by making those purchases, it will employ more people, and more people will have more money, and it's like a chain reaction. So let's say you make $100 for doing whatever. You take the $100, you go out and you buy a new pair of shoes for $100. The shoe salesman gets a commission. So he adds the commission from the sale of those shoes to you with the sale of other shoes to other people. And that weekend, he goes to the lumberyard and he buys a bunch of lumber. He pays the guy at the lumberyard money. The guy at the lumberyard takes his kids to the movies that weekend. You see how the money goes through the economy. It keeps on moving. And as it moves, it generates more profit, more money, more commerce. It's healthy. What we have now are foreign workers whose primary mission when they come here, and I don't blame them, don't blame them. Blame our government for stabbing us in the back. When foreign workers come here, their goal, understandably, is to send money back to their families in their home country. That money is lost to our economy, so the opposite happens. For every dollar you pull out of the economy loses times three, the money that wasn't circulated. If the low figure is right, and I don't think it's really the right number, but let's even look at $125 million. If $125 million, million dollars gets moved out of the economy, I'm sorry, billion dollars gets moved out of the economy, and you multiply that by three, you come very close to a half trillion dollars, which, by the way, for the record, is roughly the rate of increase of the national debt every year. Just the remittances, when you look at the multiplier effect, roughly accounts for the amount that America's deficit increases each and every year. If you stop the remittance flow, the shortfall, the deficit would remain stagnant just from that one point. It would stop going up. Now look at the other costs associated with the hiring of foreign workers. The Center for Immigration Studies did a fascinating story, and this is all in my article, by the way. So if you really want to read this and have something to hang on to and pass along and be part of my Bucket Brigade of Truth, read the articles, because all this material is in there. So what winds up happening is these folks, when they hire, let's say, foreign students, the employer does not have to put money into Social Security or Medicare. You know how we're hearing, oh, Medicare is going bankrupt and Social Security is going bankrupt? Well, billions of dollars have not been pumped in to Social Security by workers who were, in fact, foreign students, because foreign students do not have to contribute, or their employers don't have to contribute to those trust funds. That keeps billions of dollars that those slowly going bankrupt funds are experiencing. This would reverse the trend if we could get Americans working and pay into Social Security and Medicare. But we're not. So now you've created an incentive for foreign workers to get the job over Americans. If you're an employer and you are told that legally you can pay thousands of dollars less for hiring a foreign student than you would have to pay to hire an American at the same wage, if all you look at is profits, which is what companies are supposed to do, who are you going to hire? The American, where you have to put money into all those trust funds, or the foreign worker, where you don't have to put anything into the trust fund? Well, we know what the obvious answer is going to be. You're going to look to economize. The economization is coming at the solvency of Social Security and Medicare. Corporations don't care about it, but neither do our politicians. And if we hire aliens who are given lawful status, like the Dreamers, they're not covered by Obamacare. Now, under Obamacare, any employer who hires a full-time employee has a choice: pay health insurance or pay a $3,000 per employee penalty. Guess what? And that's why you have a lot of part-time workers. But if you hire an alien who's been given lawful status, they are not covered by Obamacare, so you can hire full-time foreign workers and not have to worry about that $3,000 per employee penalty. And if you have 20, 30 people working for you, 50 people, math, do the math, add it all up. You could be saving companies tens of thousands of dollars a year by getting rid of your American workers and bringing in the foreign workers. This is how it's done, folks. Do you wonder why we have tens of millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans? This is exactly what is happening. The federal government, through Obamacare, through other laws, has provided a very huge incentive for employers to get rid of Americans. You know, countries usually come up with tariffs to make certain that their products are at the equal price, so that people can't make things more cheaply and, you know, sell a competing product from outside the country. They do it to protect workers. Tariffs are designed to protect the jobs of the citizens of the country that impose the tariffs. The United States government, because it's probably one of the most corrupt governments on the planet right now, with this administration in particular, have provided incredible, huge, humongous incentives for Americans to be fired and displaced by foreign workers from all over the world. That's what's happening. So Americans who are doing a really great job are being fired so that companies can save a lot of money. Is this what the American dream is supposed to be about? And now we add to this the Secretary of Homeland Security, the agency that is the umbrella over Customs and Border Protection, that's the Border Patrol, the inspectors at the airport, and so forth, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and Citizenship and Immigration Services. He's the boss. He's the one that everybody answers to. And what has he said? When you have people working undocumented, the goal is to document them. Why isn't the goal to arrest them and deport them? You see? That's the common sense goal. That's why they're illegal. But you see, they don't use the word illegal. They use the word undocumented. So it sounds as though, well, they need a piece of paper, so we're going to give them the paper so they're no longer undocumented. Problem is, they're illegal. And the government does not have the authority, the administration does not have the authority to do what it has been doing. Take millions of illegal aliens and blanketly give them all permission to work and displace American workers. It runs contrary to common sense. It runs contrary to national security. It runs contrary to our nation's economy. Everybody, though, that's losing are the citizens of our country. The corporations, they are ecstatic. Bring it on. Because they are able to screw more Americans out of more jobs, hire more foreign workers who are more compliant, willing to work for lower wages under worse conditions with no expectations of retirement plans or anything else. We've created an irresistible incentive for the displacement of American workers. It's an irresistible incentive. And both parties want to do this. They don't care that the economy is in a death spiral. And that's exactly where we're going. So when Jay Johnson said to my friend Lou Barletta at that congressional hearing that I want to document the undocumented, I thought my blood pressure was going to go through the roof. As an agent, if I had said to my boss, hey, I just walked into this factory and I found 50 undocumented workers, give me some papers so I can document them all, they would have thought I'd lost my mind. They would have stripped me of my security clearance. But the head of the Department of Homeland Surrender has made just that statement. The solution to millions of undocumented aliens in the United States taking these jobs is to document them so they can continue working. And the hell with the Americans. Colonel Sanders in the barnyard. Think about it. That's the picture I want you to walk away with every time you see Johnson's mug on television. Think of Colonel Sanders standing in the barnyard. The reason we have a middle class is because back before the Second World War, immigration was the responsibility of the Labor Department. And the Labor Department's goal was to make certain that Americans would never have to compete with foreign workers for their jobs. So we built the middle class. Now we are dismantling the middle class by going in exactly the opposite direction. And the average American, again, one of the chickens in the barnyard, oh, I want wage equality. People are out there writhing in ecstasy when Hillary and all these other people come out there and say, wage equality, Bill Gates is worth billions, we need wage equality. Well, what does wage equality mean? Wage equality means that we're going to lower the middle class wages so that you're going to be made more equal to the poor. You know, I mean, stop and think about it. Nobody in this country asks questions anymore. People hear a slogan and they jump up and down and say, yeah, give me some of that. Give me some of that wage equality. If your boss came up to you and said, Charlie or Mary, whoever, you're doing a great job. I'm going to make your pay equal to Sam Smith over there. What's the first thing you think you should be asking your boss? This isn't rocket science. Don't you think you're going to want to know what Sam Smith is earning if now that you're going to be made equal to him? Supposing Sam Smith is earning half what you are, and you're now being told that they're going to cut your salary, but they're not telling you we're going to cut your salary. They talk to you about equality. We're going to make you equal to Sam over there. Is that the equality you want? Is that the equality Americans need? Because that's exactly what Alan Greenspan called for when he testified for Chuck Schumer back on April 30th, 2009, on the issue of comprehensive immigration reform. He said, we've got to stop shielding American workers, describing American middle-class, highly skilled, highly educated Americans as the privileged elite earning a wage premium. And he said the solution is to get rid of that wage premium so that we would attain wage equality. My God. Not one newspaper covered this. Not one television program covered this. Colonel Sanders with his recipe. The recipe is the recipe for the destruction of the United States middle class. And if you lose the middle class, you lose the heart and soul of America. We saw the riots that took place in Baltimore and the poverty. And I think I may have spoken about it last week. Baltimore has a special place in my heart. My mom came here as a 14-year-old girl ahead of the Holocaust, came through Ellis Island, went to Baltimore with some relatives, and lived in a rooming house. in a rooming house, worked in an umbrella factory for $3 a week. I understand the plight of people living in poverty. And by hard work and so forth, she bootstrapped herself out of poverty. But Baltimore was always a special place. I used to go there every summer with my parents to visit my mom's relatives, my relatives, and to see the poverty. And we heard all the speeches because the cameras were there. And these politicians are drawn to those cameras and the floodlights the way a moth is drawn to a flame or a bright light. There's the bright lights. There's Chuck Schumer. Oops, don't get between him and a camera. So they make these great speeches. We have to address the poverty. And how did they address the poverty? Did any of those politicians ever say, hey, listen, we've got to stop this massive flood of foreign workers that's competing unfairly with Americans, that's driving down wages, that's depriving our own citizens of opportunities? You didn't hear that. It was just a speech. We need to address poverty. And I just did because I used the word, and we're going to move on now. When they address poverty, it just means they're going to talk about it and then leave. You want to address poverty? Do you really want to address poverty? Give American kids an opportunity. That's how you address poverty. And when they talk about wage equality, and then somehow they hook that into $10.10 an hour. Goodness gracious. Really? $10.10 an hour, folks, if you haven't done the math, works out to give or take about $21,000 a year. I did the math. I don't have the paper in front of me. $21,000 a year? Who are you equal to at that point? In what country? Now, the fast food workers want $15 an hour. And I actually agree with it. And I know my conservative friends may disagree with me. We can have this discussion at some point. And by the way, that's another important issue, and I don't want to forget it. When we disagree today, we're not each other's enemies. You know, everything is being done to keep Americans from speaking to one another and comparing notes. Because if conservatives and liberals and independents, everyone sat down and compared notes, you know what we would find out? That we share much more, many more similarities than we don't share. And my justification for $15 an hour minimum wage is unscrupulous employers. Although I will tell you, Jeff Sessions, my favorite senator in the entire United States Senate, made an interesting point. And my friend Sam Sorbo, I'm on her show on Mondays, and you can tune in 9:30, Sam Sorbo show. And well, she's actually broadcast all week long on different stations, but I tape an interview with her every morning, every Monday morning at 9:30. What she said was echoed by what Sessions had to say, that if we stopped bringing in foreign workers, you wouldn't need a $15 an hour minimum wage. Because of supply and demand, the wages would rise automatically by themselves and would probably go well above $15 an hour. Think about that. Think about that. So if the employers don't like unions and they don't like that people are doing what they're doing, then stop screwing them. People that are happy don't complain. They're complaining, these people, because you're giving them the short end of the stick, and they know it. People that are poor aren't stupid. They're just poor. Maybe they're more honest than the wealthy, because some of the wealthy are honest, and many of them aren't. It says nothing about a person's intellect because they're poor necessarily. Don't look down at anybody, and be willing to listen to everybody and have an honest, open discussion as long as we treat each other respectfully. And come to the conversation with an open mind. But I will tell you that nobody lives on $8 an hour or $10 an hour or $15. You cannot live in New York City on $15 an hour. So everybody who has those wages also gets food stamps, housing subsidies, you name it, they're getting it. And that money doesn't just fall out of the sky like manna from heaven. We're paying for all this through our taxes. I would rather that somebody who gets up every morning and goes to work comes to understand that the effort they make is worthy of a decent paycheck. Obviously, a neurosurgeon needs to make an awful lot more than some guy who's doing manual labor in a factory. Absolutely. You know, this idea of wage equality is called communism. But nobody should be living in abject poverty when they work every day. There needs to be a way to balance the scales on that one. That's all that I'm looking to do, is to have reasonable fairness, the American dream, if you will, for Americans. What a novel thought. But that's no longer a possibility. We're being told that we need wage equality, which turns out to be another con game, because what it really means is slicing the middle class wages to the bone so we narrow the gap with the poor. And look at the harm it's doing. And then we come to what the Inspector General had to say. By the way, I want to do something before I do that. I want to be so clear on this. When I started out my article for Front Page Magazine, Theft by Deception, the Immigration Con Game, and I really hope you go check out the article. My articles for that magazine run about 3,000 words. I try to give you enough information that you really come away with a hopefully a better understanding. But I used, and many states have comparable wording, comparable language, and so forth. The state of Georgia had a really great definition of theft by deception. And it says this: A, a person commits the offense of theft by deception when he obtains property by any deceitful means or artful practice with the intention of depriving the owner of the property. And then it says a person deceives if he intentionally creates or confirms another's impression of an existing fact or past event which is false and which the accused knows or believes to be false, and it goes on from there. Think about the words being spoken about wage equality. Think about the words being spoken about the jobs Americans won't do, or the jobs Americans are too stupid to do, or not well enough trained to do. Those are false statements. They're insulting statements. They're hurtful statements. And they're using those statements to steal our American dream, to steal our national security, to steal our peace of mind. These are the folks you're voting for. This is most of the people who are running for Congress and running for the presidency right now. When they talk about the work Americans won't do and the need to bring in foreign workers to displace Americans, of course, they won't tell you that we're going to displace you, because they know if they say that, you're not going to vote for them. All these people stand there and say, I'm going to create jobs. I was watching a debate or a discussion. They were interviewing Rick Perry over at Fox News the other day, and they showed what Jeb Bush had to say, where he was bragging that he created more jobs than Rick Perry did. You know, Florida got more jobs than Texas. And it's remarkable, because everybody who's running for office, even people running for dog catcher on the local level, it seems, promised to create jobs. It doesn't matter. The job statistics are misleading. They don't tell you if it's part-time, seasonal, minimum wage. They don't tell you. Just a job. And a job is not a job. Okay? And what they're not telling you is that every month we bring in many more foreign workers than the number of new jobs that are being created. Many more. So no matter how many jobs are being created at the current rate, we will never catch up. No matter how many jobs are created, more and more and more Americans will continue to lose their jobs. More and more and more Americans will find themselves living in poverty. The number of new jobs created is meaningless as long as it does not keep pace with the number of foreign workers being admitted into the United States who are authorized to work here, and foreign workers who are coming into the United States and working without permission until Mr. Johnson comes along and gives them that magic piece of paper that allows them to work here. The American worker is being made to run up a down escalator, and every politician, with few exceptions, wants that escalator to run faster. We are running up a down escalator, and that escalator is picking up speed. But what is going down at equal speed is America's solvency, and with it, America's security. And no one seems to get it. Theft by deception. I want you to think of those words every time you hear the speech. Theft by deception. You're being lied to. And the cost is American jobs. The cost is America's solvency, and with it, its ability to survive and lead. So please understand just how important this is. Understand the way you're being lied to. Ted Cruz wants a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas. Rand Paul wants no limit whatsoever. He absolutely said, I want no limit. He actually made the statement during a CBS News interview that he voted against the Senate Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill because it imposed limits on how many foreign workers could come in. And he says it's not enough to increase the number. There needs to be no limit. I mean, really? And we're supposed to vote for somebody who makes statements like that? Please, ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. Pay attention. Wage equality is not your friend. They're going to make you equal to people living below the poverty line. That's the goal. It's the looting of America. It's just a point that I really feel so strongly that needs to be made. They are openly telling you that we are going to loot America. And by the way, what I also included in my article is that there's lots of American kids going to school and studying to be engineers and scientists, technicians, the STEM graduates, science, technology, engineering, math. And do you know what the second highest form of personal indebtedness is for the average American household? Mortgages are first, student loans are second. Student loans are second. On May 17th, 2014, the New York Daily News published an article, Americans owe $1.2 trillion in student loans, surpassing credit cards and auto loan debt totals. What are these kids getting for all that money and all that time and effort that they put into their education if they can't get jobs? If this isn't theft, I don't know what is. Because many of those kids that have run up that $1.2 trillion tab can't get jobs. They're being robbed by the failures to enforce the immigration laws and make certain that they have integrity. Theft by deception. Keep remembering that word every time you hear a politician. Theft by deception. That's what you're listening to. So, you know, this is a very big problem. And then it's interesting because there's another article worth talking about. UC Davis Health System, you go to their website, and they talk about the stress associated with job loss. You want to talk about theft? Theft of peace of mind. Listen to this. When a person's job ends involuntarily due to budget cuts, it is normal to feel a sense of loss and the need to take some time to begin to heal. At least temporarily, you may have lost many things important to you, including your daily work, your work associations, a structure for your days, financial security and status, etc. Even though the job loss is due to budget cuts and is not your fault, it is common to feel some loss of self-esteem and to think that somehow you have failed. It can be hard to tell your friends and family. And then they have a little section called loss and the grieving process. We associate grieving with the loss of a loved one. Well, guess what? Job loss is on that scale. And many Americans, because of these immigration policies, are losing their peace of mind and are going through a grieving process because of theft by deception. And this is what the article says. And these are the psychological professionals at UC Davis Health System. Loss triggers a grieving process that may include the stages of shock and denial, anger, resistance, sadness, and finally acceptance. And what I wrote was this: while the article focuses on the loss of jobs due to budget cuts, it neglects the loss of jobs due to unbridled greed and the importation of foreign workers. Of course, given all the factors, hiring foreign workers does indeed reduce the amount of money employers budget for labor. Firing qualified and experienced American and lawful immigrant workers certainly cuts the employers' budgets. Budget cuts. Okay? So please understand what the nature of this beast is. And I mentioned Alan Greenspan, so while we're at it, let me just read to you a small piece of what he had to say and see if this doesn't get your motor running. Maybe enough to go out there and start getting involved politically, ladies and gentlemen. This is Alan Greenspan. His words, my voice. The second bonus of greatly increasing H-1B visas would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of skilled over lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism. In the process, we have created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. Make Americans compete, you can pay them less, and now we are on our way to income equality. Is that the trip that you want to take, your children to take? Is that the trip you want America to take? When you hear jobs and aliens and income equality, what you're being set up for is the Colonel Sanders new recipe. Okay? Please understand what I'm telling you. Please understand the significance of all of this. And now, here's an article. And so let me just give you a little bit of this. And we're going to go through this for another 30 minutes or so. I'm doing 90 minutes today, folks. I hope you find this helpful. I want you to be armed with the facts. It is so easy to listen to slick politicians and think you're hearing one thing when you're hearing something else. This bait and switch swindle is very, very dangerous. And I really want you to understand the way we're being lied to, the way you're being lied to, and what this really means for America, Americans, our children, our grandchildren. We're being hammered into the ground, and we're allowing this to happen to us. We are allowing this to happen to us. And, you know, it's amazing when these politicians make these statements, how many people stand up and start cheering. Imagine if from now on, boys and girls, you hear a politician talk about bringing in foreign workers and if everybody stood up and booed. Imagine if everybody stood up and chanted Americans first, Americans first. Imagine if Ted Cruz said, we're going to bring in more people, and if everybody in the audience stood up and said, no, Americans first. You know, that would make a hell of an image, wouldn't it, on television. And you know what? We all have cell phones. We all have those smartphones with the little video cameras. Videotape it. Put it up on YouTube, the way they did with Luis Gutierrez when he tried to hold a town hall meeting in Spanish in these United States of America. You know, my mom spoke Yiddish and Polish. My dad's family spoke Yiddish and Russian. But they wouldn't speak that language in the house. They spoke English. It was about becoming American. When a member of the United States Congress insists that it's appropriate to hold a town hall meeting with his supposed constituents in Spanish, it was being done to lock out anybody who could not speak Spanish. I lack compassion by wanting our laws enforced? No, Mr. Gutierrez lacks compassion for American citizens because he doesn't give a rat's tail about us. He has an agenda. And every politician who talks about importing more foreign workers has that same agenda. They just might say it in a little more subtle way. But think of Gutierrez. Think of that conference in Spanish or any other language. Perhaps Chinese would be more appropriate because we admit legally more Chinese immigrants than any other country on the planet, and we educate more of their students than students from any other country on the planet. They come in first, India comes in second, South Korea's there, Saudi Arabia. And then we're hearing, by the way, that, well, if we don't staple green cards onto their diplomas, another one of the swindling statements, another lie, then they're just going to go back to their country. I got a better idea. You want to hear a shocker? Make sure American kids go to those schools. Then they're not going to go halfway across the world to their home country. They'll just go back to their apartment with their degree halfway across town. What a novel thought. Actually educating American kids. Ladies and gentlemen, I would rather build more schools, whether they're universities or trade schools, whatever, than more prisons. When you put people in a situation when they're in a maze and there's no escaping the maze, they will do things to break out of that maze, and often it involves violating our laws. Provide the opportunities. Provide our young Americans with a legal path to success. They talk about a pathway to citizenship for illegal aliens. I want a pathway to success for Americans. What a novel thought that would be. So when you go to these town hall meetings and the politician talks about the need to bring in more foreign workers, don't you dare let those bums ever again get away with it. Get on your feet and start yelling Americans first. It's a simple phrase. You don't have to read much. Just two words, Americans first. Especially when you look at the poverty in America's minority communities, don't let anybody tell you this is about racism. Our immigration laws have nothing to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. but it's American minority members who are suffering the worst under the current situation. That's not to say that we aren't all suffering. We all are. But as bad as it is, it's even worse in America's black and Latino communities. It's time Americans got on their feet every time they go to one of these events and we listen to the nonsense, and I think we need to get on our feet and just say two words, Americans first. Americans first. Think about that. Think of how powerful that statement is. Force the debate to go in that direction. Even the journalists who wouldn't know the truth if it jumped up and bit them on the nose could not ignore that. It's a powerful statement because it also tells everybody that we are on to them. We're not buying their lies anymore. Americans first, right? Think about that. Think how effective. But let me get back to what the Inspector General, John Roth, had to say at this hearing that was held on June 17th of this year, this past week. And it was a joint hearing held by the Subcommittee on National Security and the Subcommittee on Healthcare Benefits and Administrative Rules. Now, here's something interesting just from the off the top. We're told that immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. I've heard members of Congress tell this to me with a straight face when I've testified at hearings. Oh, Mr. Cutler, stop right there. Immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. Well, if immigration has nothing to do with terrorism, why was it that one of the two hearings, or one of the two committees that held the hearing, was the Subcommittee on National Security? Stop and think about that. Again, theft by deception. Just keep thinking these key words. It'll make such good sense to all of you. The clarity is amazing. It's like having a pair of fogged-up sunglasses or eyeglasses, and you go to the sink with some nice soapy water and a nice clean paper towel, and now you can see so clearly. That's my goal, to help you see clearly. Theft by deception. Theft by deception. Just think of those words, because these are all deceivers. That's what we're talking about. Now, here's what's so amazing. Do you know what the federal government is spending to fund Customs and Border Protection, ICE, and Citizenship and Immigration Services? This is going to blow you away. Last year, they spent $21 billion. Billion. And what was so astonishing is throughout all of this, the same words kept on coming out, that there was no reporting and no information about anything. Because normally there's accountability. Normally when you arrest people, you capture statistics. If you encounter people that you don't put into custody, you still have to write it up. Because there's always the concern that an agent might have taken a bribe, that there's something going on. So you always had to account for your activities. And when you read the article that will be on Front Page Magazine, and I expect to write about it elsewhere, you will see that almost in every single category, there was no reporting, no information made available. $21 billion with no accountability from what was supposed to be the most transparent administration in history. $21 billion. This wasn't the first time. On May 4th, and this hearing quoted a prior report, May 4th, 2015, the Inspector General issued a different report. Now listen to the title of this report. DHS missing data needed to strengthen its immigration enforcement efforts. You see the pattern? Don't ask, don't tell, or even if you do ask, we're not telling. We're going to treat you like mushrooms, keep you in the dark, and feed you a lot of manure. That has been the pattern of this administration. Answer no questions. Don't tell you what they're doing, how they're doing it, why they're doing it. You know, when I lost family members, my rabbi would say, God works in strange ways. I know that people of the Christian faith often hear the same kind of explanation. Well, it's hard accepting it in a religious context. We should never have to accept it in a governmental context. The administration is working in mysterious and strange ways. Well, it certainly is, but it certainly does not want to be made accountable, and obviously for good reasons. Because nothing that this administration has done has been in the best interests of the citizens of the United States. Displacing American workers costs this country immeasurably. Increased crime, increased deficits, more suffering. Think about it. Foreign workers take American jobs, send more money home. Foreign workers who displace American workers push Americans from jobs onto the unemployment line and into the very costly economic safety net programs through no fault of their own. You're fired. And very often, just like it was reported about Disney, they will not give you a letter of reference because they want this to happen across the board. They want to eliminate American workers from the labor pool because, darn it, those Americans, they expect a living wage. What is wrong with these people? We can bring in people from third world countries who are happy to work for a warm bowl of rice and a couple of dollars. So why would we want to keep Americans in the labor pool? Well, what they don't understand is they will eventually go bankrupt when they bankrupt all of us. These people, these individuals, these organizations, I compare them to cancer. Cancer has an insatiable appetite for nutrients. Cancer secretes hormones so that the body surrounds the tumor with blood vessels so that it can bathe itself in nutrients. And it really works out well for the cancer. It almost becomes like an organ within the body and the most successful organ. It grows faster. It grows vibrantly. Wow, how great is that? Right up until the day it kills the patient, and then it gets buried along with its victim. What these greedy bums don't understand is that if they destroy the United States, they've sealed their own fate also. But they are in such a feeding frenzy, just like a malignant tumor, that they can't see beyond tomorrow. They can't see beyond the earnings statement. They can't see beyond their bank statements. They're playing with fire, and we're the ones getting burned. But ultimately, it will envelop all of us if we're not careful. Think about what I'm saying. Now, I'm going to read a couple of quick excerpts. Because, I mean, it's astonishing when you read what he had to say. Now, I'm quoting from the Inspector General, the guy that is supposed to make certain that there's integrity. Integrity and this administration are two words that don't seem to work very well together. Oh, my goodness. I'm just trying to find the best words that I can read to you. Well, let's start with this. And I don't agree with his numbers of 11.5 million illegals, by the way. I think that that's fantasy. We don't know what we don't know. When Reagan told us that about 1 million illegal aliens would get lawful status under his amnesty, we wound up with almost 4 million. Today they're telling us 11 million. If the same ratio holds true, we'll be well into the 30s or maybe even top out at beyond 40 million such aliens if history was to repeat itself. But let's move on, and let me read this to you. There are an estimated 11.5 million removable aliens in the United States. The word removable is interchangeable with deportable, illegal, okay? Roughly equivalent to the population of Ohio, including people who may pose a risk to public safety or national security. Now, again, immigration not involved with terrorism? Really? According to ICE, DHS removed or returned a total of 577,294 aliens in fiscal year 2014. Given the sheer number of removable aliens and the finite resources available to remove them, DHS has decided that it must focus on those who pose the greatest risk. To this end, DHS has instituted various policies over time that allow the use of prosecutorial discretion in making immigration enforcement decisions. However, the department does not collect or use full range of prosecutorial discretion data to help assess immigration policy, evaluate the effectiveness and results of enforcement actions, or to be able to assess the reasonableness of the exercise of that discretion on the part of DHS personnel. This guy works for the U.S. government. Takes a lot of courage. I am sure there were a lot of frowns at headquarters when he issued this report, and even more frowns at the White House. In May, we reported that DHS is not collecting and analyzing enough data and does not have a mechanism to monitor and receive feedback on the results of using prosecutorial discretion. We also reported, that was that report I cited to you, we also reported on the inability of offices of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, to access aliens' criminal records in their countries of origin. Think about that. We don't know if these are even fugitives who maybe committed murder or were involved with terrorism. During our audit, we reviewed data the department and its components collected and reported as of September 30, 2014, prior to the policy changes announced by the administration in November 2014. Our office has not assessed the legal basis of the department's executive immigration reforms, prior prosecutorial discretion policies or prosecutorial decisions made on individual cases. So what he's saying is, read between the lines, we're not even going to open that can of worms over whether this is even legal or reasonable. Now, understand, he works for the government. It took a lot of courage on this guy's part, and I commend him. Now, I'm going to read one or two quick things here, because I really want you to read the whole article. I really want you to sit down, and maybe it's a little bit difficult. You know, people sometimes say to me, you know, you write a little bit long. I stand guilty as accused. Because these aren't sound bites. We're trying to convince people about what we need to do based on sound bites. And just a week earlier, I wrote an article about bumper sticker slogans and how you can't articulate proper goals and effectiveness by bumper sticker slogans. We really need to have a serious conversation. We need to look at hard facts. And, you know, maybe you're going to want to read my article in two or three sittings, and that's fine. I don't mind. But I sit and write these articles, for whether it's for Front Page, whether it's for Californians for Population Stabilization, Progressives for Immigration Reform, The Social Contract. That's really a huge article. The article that's going to be in Social Contract, the original manuscript, believe it or not, folks, 50 pages. 50 pages. They're cutting it down a little bit. But, you know, this is in depth. Because I know you're smart enough, you're listening to my program. Well, let's go beyond that. I know you're motivated. And I have a request. If you find this information really helpful, please, I beg you, I urge you, I beseech you, I don't know what words I can use, pass the information to everybody you know. You know, when I write my commentaries, I call it my bucket brigade of truth. I really and truly need you to educate as many people as you can and get them to do the same thing. See, there's a news blackout in the major networks. Most television networks have multilingual outlets. They're very happy to see more people turn the station onto those other programs because they can then charge more for the airtime. And that's why they exist. See, people don't understand something. When you're watching television, do you know why television is on the air? Do you know what's the most important part of a television program? Do you really want the secrets? I studied TV production back in college. The most important part of a television program are the commercials. Those are the money makers. The programming is the stuffing that they put between the commercials to entice you into watching. That's why they called soap operas soap operas. Because the purpose of the program wasn't, you know, whether, you know, Mary ran off with John or Bill killed Steve. The purpose of the program was to get the average housewife to sit in front of the TV screen. Remember, back in the 40s and 50s when TV first started out, most women were housewives, stayed home. Nothing wrong with that, by the way. But, you know, demographically, it was aimed at that housewife, and they tried to sell her soap and other household products. So they called them soap operas, you know, little dramas that primary mission was to sell soap, sell, you know, cereal, sell diapers. And so today, the TV network folks, their biggest concern is how many people are watching their programming and watching the commercials so they can charge those advertisers even more money as more people turn the televisions on. You know, a lawyer can never have too many clients, and a television network can never have too many viewers. So please understand what we're dealing with. So the solution to the failure of network news, so-called news, is to provide alternative resources where we can educate ourselves and our fellow Americans. And my area of expertise is very narrow, very limited. It's about immigration. But this has been my life's work in a manner of speaking, in a very real manner of speaking. So what I'm asking you to do is please take the time and read these articles and pass them along. Because I think, I hope, that when you read the article, things will become really crystal clear. It will come into focus as to what this level of betrayal is, what this, you know, theft by deception is really all about. Because that's really what this all is. It's theft by deception. Now, here's a paragraph. I'm just going to read the highlighted stuff, and I actually highlighted it in the way I wrote it up. DHS also does not collect or other prosecutorial discretion-related data that might help immigration efforts. For example, DHS would benefit from capturing information regarding aliens who are granted prosecutorial discretion and later commit a crime or pose a threat to national security and public safety. So what are they saying? we have no idea if people that are turned loose, just like the tens of thousands of criminals that Obama turned loose, they are making damn sure to not capture any statistics, so when they commit more murders and rapes or maybe get involved in a terrorist attack, nobody will be able to point a finger and said, wait a minute, you had that guy in custody, you released him? It's your fault that that family was run over. It's your fault that that woman was killed or raped. No, they're doing everything they can to keep the American people from knowing what they're doing. Is this still a government of the people, by the people, for the people? Really? And by the way, when they say we need America to lead, America, as I've written in many of my articles, is not simply, rivers, lakes, forests, parks, cities. You know, Sinatra sings a great song, and I've provided links in some of my articles for capsweb.org and Front Page Magazine. The house I live in, it starts out, what is America to me? And I won't sing because I sing terribly. I made money when people paid me to not sing. But the line starts out, what is America to me? And then at the very end, he says, most of all, it's its people. That's America to me. How is America leading with tens of millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans suffering right now? And those numbers are going up, not down, folks. Think about theft by deception. Then there's another one. As it stands now, there is no mechanism by which to assess the reasonableness of an individual officer's similarly situated aliens or to compare the use of prosecutorial discretion by various field officers. This data, if collected, could also be used to evaluate the performance of individual officers or field officers. Well, what is this saying? This leaves the door open to the potential for corruption. There's no accountability. Do what you want, just don't arrest anybody. No one's keeping track, it's okay. You know, we used to have an expression, big cases, big problems, little cases, little problems, no cases, you guessed it, no problems. So there's no way of knowing that some agent encountered 15 illegal aliens and just decided, see ya, don't bother, it's okay. How does that work? How does that work? Police departments, law enforcement agencies always want their people accountable. If I was on surveillance and blew a red light, we had to do certain things to keep up with the bad guys. We were driving undercover cars. We had lights and sirens in them, but obviously you can't follow someone discreetly with your light and siren on, so you get pulled over by a police officer. And the cop's instructions were very simple. Quickly take the name of the agent, the agency that he works for, and his ID number, and let him go quickly. So if Internal Affairs is driving by and sees Officer Smith in police car number so-and-so, and they question him afterwards and say, well, wait a minute, we saw you pull somebody over. Did you give him a ticket? Why did you pull him over? If he can't explain it, it's going to look as though maybe he took a bribe from somebody. You know, guy ran a light, the guy offered him a 50, he said, get going. So to protect the police officer from that kind of an allegation, they would take down, let's say, my badge number, my creds number. And the fact that I was with INS, I was on the drug task force, and I was in the midst of a surveillance. So now Internal Affairs knows now the cop is doing his job. Nothing improper happened. He just didn't want to interfere with an ongoing federal investigation of a major drug trafficker or a terrorist or whatever. But you always had to give that cop your information so that he was protected against the claim that perhaps he did something illegal himself. Well, what the OIG, and they worry about that kind of corruption at OIG, their internal affairs, what they're saying is we have no idea what these agents are doing because in their drive to not record anything so that the public has no idea the magnitude of the harm being done by this theft by deception, they're actually willing to just let these agents basically not record anything. So nobody knows why actions were or were not taken. So this all comes down to a lack of integrity of the entire system. And by the way, I think most agents are very law-abiding, very honest, very honorable. I had the privilege of working with some of the finest human beings I've ever known, and many of us are still like part of a big family. You know, I'm closer to them than I would be with some of my family members. So, you know, I think that the opportunities or the potential is small, but it's not acceptable. It's not the way to do business. there needs to be accountability in all professions, but especially in a profession like law enforcement. Finally, I want to get to this. The directorate, this is again going back to the agency, also negotiated fines with employers, in some cases substantially reducing the amounts. Homeland Security investigations inconsistent implementation of the administrative inspection process, plus the reduction of fines, may have hindered its mission to prevent or deter employers from violating immigration laws. Theft by deception. When you don't properly go after people who employ illegal aliens, you entice more illegal aliens to come into the United States, and by not removing illegal aliens from the workforce, you're making certain that Americans will never get to do those jobs. There are consequences. There are consequences to what is going on right now. People running for Congress, other than talking about fences, is really coming out with strong, unequivocal position on just how important our immigration laws are, our borders are, integrity is in the system. You know, mandatory E-Verify doesn't mean anything if you're giving everybody employment authorization. It's not just the Mexican border. That's why I wrote an article that I called Border Security and the Immigration Colander. You know, I ended this particular commentary by saying that there's a Yiddish expression that says that when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head. The failure of the administration to impose accountability on the immigration components of DHS parallels the way that the administration itself aggressively opposes any efforts to make it accountable as well. The administration has set the tone, and that tone is way off key. That was how I ended my article. And finally, I want to just take a fast peek at what I've written for CAPS. You know, the American immigration system must benefit American workers first and foremost. That's not happening. And, you know, CAPS has been so phenomenal on beating this drum, on making it clear, whether it's the H-1B visa program, whether it's the environment that's getting hammered because we have so many people that are using such limited resources, this is not sustainable. You know, the liberal side of the equation, we keep hearing about sustainability. How sustainable is it to continue to admit millions of foreign authorized workers each and every year at a time when we can never create enough jobs? Is that sustainable? Is it sustainable that every time we admit another foreign worker, he or she tries desperately to get ever more money out of our economy back to their home country? Is that sustainable? Is it sustainable for our schools to continue to graduate kids with the degrees, with the credentials, and then find that they're all dressed up and nowhere to go? That's not sustainable either. And by having foreign nationals in our schools and working for our corporations, it makes opportunities for hacking and espionage a lot easier for the bad guys. That's not sustainable. There is nothing that we are doing from the perspective of immigration and border security that makes any sense for America or Americans. That was the nature of the most recent article that the Californians for Population Stabilization, CAPS Web, published on their website. And, you know, it's so remarkable that the other side likes to hammer us. I was a B'nai B'rith president back in college. The Anti-Defamation League, ADL, is a wing of the B'nai B'rith. And, you know, they talked about how, oh, Mike Cutler, you know, writes for this organization. And they start quoting all these other people. And terrible guy that Mike Cutler is, he has talked about this. He's linking immigration to national security, to terrorism. Well, why did the IG just testify before the Committee on National Security? Why did the 9/11 Commission talk about visa fraud, border security, people getting temporary worker status in order to enter the country and embed themselves in preparation for an attack? Does that mean that the 9/11 Commission was xenophobic? No. I mean, you deal with the facts. So you look at all these groups that are making these scandalous statements that are doing harm to people's reputation so they can pocket more money. I resent it. It's infuriating. But this has come to pass for business as usual in this country today. the idea that we vilify anybody who stands for Americans. We're in a serious situation. This is not about xenophobia. And I can tell you that when I've gone into the TV studios, when they send that limousine to pick you up, it's a private limo company, and you speak with people from all over the world. I had one driver who came here from China 15 years ago, and he was telling me how his son was just starting high school, and he was all excited. And he said to me, I have to tell you, if the United States was 15 years ago what it is today, I never would have come here. He said there's more opportunities for people in China today than there are for Americans in America. What does that say? I've heard the same things from people from Latin America. What do they keep telling me? I'm almost sorry I came here. This is not the America that I came to 15, 18, 20 years ago. We need to wake up, ladies and gentlemen. And this isn't about being xenophobic or vilifying immigrants. My mom was an immigrant. My dad's parents were immigrants. My first wife, may she rest in peace, her family came here right after the Holocaust. They came directly from refugee resettlement camps. You know, I certainly, in fact, I'm a fan of political asylum, but not the way it's being administered. We have a record of giving terrorists political asylum. Think of the Tsarnaev brothers. Think of the Times Square bomber getting citizenship, Faisal Shahzad. There's a pattern of our immigration system failures that are costing American lives and American jobs, and that's precisely why we have immigration laws, to protect the jobs and the lives of Americans. And the accusations fly that it's a matter of xenophobia, that it's unfair. I mean, it's amazing stuff. And all you have to do is be an advocate for our fellow Americans. It has to stop, and we need to make it stop. I always think of the words of wisdom that my parents left me with. You know, I lost them when I was in college. Tragically, they both had cancer. But my dad used to say to me, Mike, he had a very serious look on his face. He said to me, you're going to teach people how they should treat you by demonstrating consistently what you are willing to accept. If you allow people to use you for a doormat, then they will be shocked on the day when you say, I've had enough. He said, you need to start out and be clear about what you're willing to accept. Folks, I'm going to tell you the advice my dad gave me. We're gearing up for the presidential election. These people are out there making these speeches. They need to be made accountable. When you hear some politician tell you that they plan to bring in tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of competing foreign workers, they need to hear from you. And sometimes a simple phrase like, no, you don't, Americans first, would do quite a bit to level the scales and send a very clear message. Please pass this along to all your friends and neighbors. To all you fathers out there, happy Father's Day. And to the rest of, well, not to the rest of you, to all of you, I look forward to seeing you all next week, same time, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. But please, ladies and gentlemen, remember, democracy is not a spectacle, but please get involved, get your voices heard, make it clear to our political representatives, so-called, that we are not as dumb, gullible, or as blind as they hope that we are. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you next week.